Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an incredible show for you today. I'm excited about every show. I don't know about you, but I look forward to the Roundtable Talk Show, not only because I'm the host, but I get to meet five new friends. Every morning, where else can you do that? And that's what I do here. I get to learn about different businesses, different journeys, different stories, and I can take that information and share it with my network. So I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do each and every morning, Monday through Friday, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. There's someone, some business owner, some entrepreneur, maybe they're an employee, I don't know, but maybe they want to start on their entrepreneurial journey or start their own business, and they can benefit from this information, and they won't know about it unless you share it with them. And like I always say, friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're going ahead and introducing the Roundtable Talk Show to your friends, I'm going to introduce you to one of my friends, Miss Allison Allman. You've seen her on the Roundtable Talk Show many times, but this is her first appearance in the new year. Allison Allman is known as the organization maven. She helps busy, disorganized people in Southern California by organizing their homes, offices, and lives. She has been organizing for 20 years. Her method of dealing with root causes and purging excess items has transformed her clients' lives. She keeps up with the organizing trends and adapts her business to further help her clients. The organization maven was featured on a Los Angeles television show called Destination LA. It aired on CBS2 and KKL9 and can be viewed on Amazon Prime Video. Good morning, Allison. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. It's like Monday, but on Tuesday.
I know it's February already and I haven't seen you.
I know you've been busy. I've been busy. It's been a great 2021 so far.
Okay, but fill me in. What have you been up to?
I've been back to doing a lot of garages. As soon as the weather cleared, we had a couple of rainy days, but pretty much with the virus still continuing and everyone still in various stages of lockdown and quarantine and stuff, as soon as people are letting other people into their homes, I've been going back in and organizing and doing a lot of garages. I did two garages last week. I did a garage a week before that. I have a garage this Saturday. Like, I have been doing garages, which is making me so exciting. It's actually setting the tone for some of my clients, where once I organized the garage and kind of re-gave them hope for their lives and their home, they have gone on and organized different parts of inside of their house, and then they report back to me on how excited they are and how much they accomplished. And that makes me feel so good. Like, it gives me all those warm fuzzies.
Ooh, I love warm fuzzies. That's exciting. But I want to go back to talking about the garages. On a previous show, one of the things that you mentioned is that there was so much more that can be done with the garage, especially with the global pandemic. You've seen people turn them into home gyms or she caves or different exciting opportunities than just maybe cleaning a room.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've done quite a few garage gyms. The last makeover that I did that became a garage was December. I mean, that became a home gym. That it was a garage in December. I did that one. That was a 3-day project. That one was a surprise for her husband. So I had to get there after he went to work and be all finished, packed up, and down the street before he came home so that there was no signs of disturbance. So that was a little tough on my end because he works like from 4 a.m. to 3 p.m. and I couldn't get there at 4 a.m. I do this thing called sleep until like 7. So so I wasn't starting until 8 a.m. So I only had from like 8 to 2 to work on the garage, which is why it took 3 days. No, most of my garages take 2 days or less. But it was so, so great to watch the video. And he was like practically crying. I felt like we were on one of those reveal shows without all the, you know, cameras and everything. And so he just kept saying, well, where's my garage? And she's like, well, we made it over. It's a home gym now. And he's like, right. But where's all the stuff? Where's all the stuff that made it so you couldn't even walk into the garage? And she goes, oh, we organized it or trashed it.
But was he happy with that? Sometimes people don't want you messing with their things.
I'm very respectful to people's possessions, and the things that went in the trash needed to go in the trash. But in fact, earlier this week, I did a garage in a I don't even know the right word to say, but the dad did not give permission for me to come organize because he's a very private man, and the daughter did it as a surprise. And the cat wasn't out of the bag until I showed up that morning. And so he left in a huff because he felt violated. And I didn't know all this until later. But once I discovered tools and manly things, I'm like, okay, this must be her dad's stuff. And I totally organized it and labeled it and actually didn't get rid of any of his stuff. There were some questionable things I wanted to get rid of, but I'm like, nope, I don't have his permission. So I'm just going to stack it all on one side of the garage and everything. So then later I checked with the daughter to be like, is dad okay? Because I really can't undo what I did. I mean, I guess I could bring the trash back, but she's like, well, he isn't mad, but he's definitely been outside a lot just looking. So we're taking that as a sign of good. I respected all of his tools and organized his tools and just, you know, and then when I put pictures on the internet, I cropped a couple pictures to that had personal his name on signs and stuff. And so yeah, I try to respect people. I understand that a lot of the problems that they can't let go. I do a lot of working with I have a lot of patience.
Absolutely. Allison, I'm going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And you have seen him here as well, Mr. Aiden Sowa. Aiden is the founder of Sowa Marketing Agency, a company which specializes in getting entrepreneurs featured in the media like Yahoo, Forbes, Entrepreneur, and 500 plus other media outlets. Good morning, Aiden, and welcome back.
Yeah, great to be on the show again. How are you doing?
I'm fine. You look like you're out there floating somewhere. I love it.
Yeah, just like California.
Yes. I love your shirt too. You got a whole lot going on today.
Yeah, for sure.
Flowing.
Yeah, you feel like you're flowing too.
Wow. Now, 500 plus media outlets, all this exposure, you have your own company. And to me, I'm looking at you, you look like you're 12. How do you do all of this?
Well, I mean, it's just like anything in life. If you have like more connections, you're able to do a lot more. Just being able to appear on shows, being able to do more, all of a sudden people reach out to you like, oh, by the way, I do this. And I'm like, okay, I'd love to talk with you. And then we set up a conversation and then they introduce me to a friend of theirs. It's all about getting like those first connections. So it takes a long time, especially the first start. I feel like in a business, especially reaching like that first like 5,000 a month, 10,000 a month, et cetera, is like one of the most difficult things. And once you reach that point, then like, oh, now I can scale to 20,000 so much easier than like to five, it took to get to 5,000. So the same thing when it comes to like my connections and stuff.
So basically you made a few friends, you appeared on the roundtable talk show, and then your world just took off.
Well, not quite, but I mean, the roundtable talk has definitely been great.
That was a shameless plug in there. Sowa Marketing. Why marketing, Aiden?
Why marketing? Well, I mean, I was always, when I was younger, I was just looking at like a lot of different businesses, and there was some businesses which I love. I do Taekwondo, for example, and I'm like a black belt in that, and I loved the other place which I went to, but it was struggling because they didn't have like any sort of like online presence. And I always thought to myself, like, how can I help businesses like that? And eventually marketing was like my way of helping out, just helping some of these like local businesses, which really just were kind of falling apart in the internet age.
How do you get them into media opportunities?
I just have like, I know how to be able to take someone's story, because everyone has like their own unique story, and be able to pitch it to the media. Not everyone knows how to do that. So that's what I really do. And I have like a ton of different connections at places like Forbes, Inc. You can pretty much name it, even various TV outlets. That's one thing that's really changed since the last time we talked, because now I have a lot more connections, a lot of TV outlets like Fox Business, Bloomberg, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. So basically, we're going to talk to all of them, and we're going to get the roundtable talk show out there. That's what you're saying, Aiden? He's like, I don't know, but we'll figure it out. I'm going to come back to you, Aiden, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And our next guest is Dr. Kim Saxton. Dr. Kim has over 30 years of marketing and market research experience, working with large corporations, startups, and medium-sized businesses. Currently, she is a clinical professor of marketing at Indiana University's Kelly School of Business. Her teaching success has been recognized through numerous teaching awards, including an Across India University Presents Award for Teaching Excellence. Kim's research on market segmentation, branding, promotional strategies, venture success, and venture ecosystems has been published in numerous international academic journals. She also serves as an associate editor for the Journal of Advertising Research. Kim is an active angel investor and advisor to high potential startups. Good morning, Dr. Saxton. How are you?
Good morning. You're kind of scaring me by reading that bio, actually.
Why are you scared?
I don't know. It sounds like somebody's like 100 years old. I think I'm, you know, not quite there yet. A lot older than Aiden, but.
We're all older than Aiden.
But then maybe that's more School of Hard Knocks, I'm guessing.
I love your background as well. Was that Alaska?
Well, actually, it's up in near Greenland, where we see lots of icebergs. And that's because I wrote a book called with my husband called The Titanic Effect. And it's all about mistakes that we saw entrepreneurs and startups make. And you think of these mistakes as like little icebergs, and you don't know if it's a really big iceberg because it's all underneath the ground. And you make choices because you don't really know for sure what you should do. And it turns out that there are consequences of these choices. So I like to have these little icebergs in the background when I talk to entrepreneurs.
It looks like you're floating there. I love it. What are some of the icebergs that many entrepreneurs might miss starting out?
Yeah, so we kind of organize them into four different areas. We call them oceans. So we have the human ocean. So that's from like, who do you decide to co-found your business with, to how do you get investors and things like that. I talk about the marketing ocean, which is, you know, as Aiden can attest, it's got a lot of icebergs or sharks out there, depending on how you want to define them. And then we think about the technical ocean, which is like, how do you actually get stuff done? There's a concept called technical debt that we sort of leverage. And then even strategy, how do you pull it all together? So the number one thing that causes companies to fail is the fact that they have something that nobody wants to buy. It's called lack of product market fit, which is mostly a marketing problem. So we spend a lot of time talking about that. Of course, the second reason they fail is they run out of money. So
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, so money's right up there, right? But theoretically, if you get the right product, then you'll have money, right? So if you fix that problem first, the second problem will be more fixable.
So when these companies start out, they have a product the world loves, the world's interested, and maybe the world will be the path to their door. But what if they don't have the resources initially to be able to create the product or take the product to market or take the product to manufacturers? Sometimes that stops them before they even get into business.
Yeah. And so one of the things that we talk about isn't it, it's not so much the product, it's the problem. Mm-hmm. And we need to be focused on a problem that needs to be solved and have a solution that solves it better than anything else. And if you can do those things, then the rest of it will sort of find your way. The biggest problem that we see is exactly what you're saying, which is somebody has a product and they're trying to figure out how to make it, but really nobody wants it or needs it. And so spending more time figuring out the right problem to solve and how to solve it will make some of those other issues go away. I've also been a board member of a local group here in Indianapolis called the Startup Ladies. And so this is a big issue I see about funding. You know, a lot of startups have to work from what we call friends and family money. And there are certain demographic groups that just don't have friends and family money. You can't mortgage your house. You can't, you know, get extra lines of credit on a credit card. You can't knock on your neighbor's doors and ask for $5,000. And so the Startup Ladies is one organization that's trying to get money together for that really pre-seed. So like early when you want to get to a prototype or something, you know, there isn't money for those kinds of activities. And so this is a group that's trying to fill that gap.
Yes. And I think that's, an excellent point, because so often when people are looking for investment, people will say, go to angel investors, go to angel investors, go to angel investors. But it's very difficult to even get into those networks. It's not just that they're an old boys club. It's just that you have to know someone to be able to get in that circle. When we were raising funds about 4 years ago, that was the problem, that one of the problems that we ran into. So I definitely can relate and understand. Now, Dr. Kim, go ahead.
Well, it's not just that, but you also have to be far enough along that they're willing to invest. And sometimes if you don't have any capital, it's hard to get far enough along to be what we call fundable.
Right, right. So I have to take a look. What is, you said the funding ladies, was it?
The startup ladies. The
startup ladies. Do you have a group or a website?
Yeah, so it's the startupladies.org. And they hold like startup study halls, they're called, twice a month. And they do some mental wellness for entrepreneurs. And they also do startup investing 101. The idea here is to get women to invest in other businesses. And actually they are, they speak highly for diversity among all ways. So, you know, minority, LGBTQT women, and actually there's men involved in the startup place too, because some men need an extra hand too. It's, you know, it's a free world. Everybody needs help.
Yes, we might have to do a separate special show and sit down with the startup ladies and find out some strategies on how to get investing. Now, Dr. Kim, I want to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And this beautiful young lady is here today to tell us about her journey, Ms. Judy Gilliam. Judy is an educator who has served as a teacher, principal, superintendent, and college professor. Florence is her debut children's book and was published in September 2020. Good morning, Judy. How are you?
Good morning. It's nice to see all of you guys. I was thinking as you were talking, what could an educator and a children's picture book writer possibly say that entrepreneurs and others you know, could benefit from? And honestly, my journey to get this book published, and it's called Florence and Her Fantastic Family. The journey to get it published is almost more interesting than anything else that has happened about writing the book. And I have actually some lessons learned that I like to share from time to time when I'm on with a group. I've been very lucky that I've been able to make those connections that Aiden, I think, was talking about, that you have to make the connections to get this out. A publishing company has published it. It's not self-published. And they picked it up. So they have a marketing department and they market it. But they also expect the author to market as well and to make those connections. So I've spent an awful lot of time with different groups getting my story out. The story, very briefly, is about a little girl who is assigned a classic school assignment, which is to create a family tree. And her family is so complicated and complex, and she really doesn't know how she's ever going to present this to her classroom, because it has so many leaves and branches and roots and nuts and berries. So that's what the story is about. And it came from my own grandchild's asking me questions about just how she fit into her very complex family. But the journey to get it published, I guess just to back up just a bit, I started teaching in 1971, and you ask, good Lord, how old is this woman? But and over the course of my 40-year career, I did a lot of different things. And when I retired, it was like, well, you know, I love children's literature. I had a story to tell, and so I wrote it. And then I started the arduous process of sending the manuscript out to publishers and agents. And that went on for about 6 months. There's a book that I bought called Children's Writers and Illustrators Market. And it is a thick, very thick book of publishers and agents and who they are looking for. and if they are looking for it. Remember, mine was an unsolicited manuscript. I was just sending it out. And so you read through this market book and you find that, hey, here's a company, a publishing company that wants to have stories about blended families. Or here's another one that only publishes nautical tales for Southwest Indian tribes. Or here's one that just publishes for Christian stories, etc. And so you have to go through this book and find the ones where you think you might fit in, and then you start sending it out. So the lessons I learned from that journey, amazing. And finally, after about 6 months of sending it out and getting lots and lots of rejections back, I heard from a publishing company out in California called Familius. They do a lot of family stories and things that I think their motto is how to help families be happy. And so, you know, I was so used to getting these rejections. I'd get an email and it would always say, oh, thank you so much for thinking of us, but you're just not quite a fit. Okay. So I opened this one up and the publisher says, Judy, we think your book is very clever and we'd like to publish it. And as you can tell, I have a Southern accent. I'm from Atlanta. And so as we say in the Deep South, when I opened that email and Christopher said, we want to publish, I just about fell out. I had to sit down because I did not believe it was true. But anyway, there began this journey and what I call the dance back and forth all around to finally get this published. From the time I got the first email until it was published in 2020 in September was a little over 2 years. And of course the illustrations with the illustrator had to go back and forth. So anyway, a lot of lessons learned. It's not the same, I'm sure, as publishing as Vamsee and Kim have done publishing their books. I think Vamsee, you have a book.
We gonna talk about that.
Yeah. It's still a journey.
It's the same for everybody trying to publish, honestly. It's the same.
Oh my gosh. And so like I said, I think it's just it's so interesting. As a longtime educator, teacher, principal, superintendent, I had absolutely no idea about the publishing business. So now I think I have more to say about the journey of that than I do about my precious little Florence and her family tree.
But well, let's talk about it. Definitely want to talk about it, Judy. I'm going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Vamsee Pinnala. Vamsee is a renowned virtual summit coach, podcaster, marketer, and entrepreneur. He is the founder of Impact Marketing Summit and the host of the Authority Entrepreneurs podcast, where he helps entrepreneurs rise out of obscurity and stand out in a crowded world. After spending over 13 years as a sales and marketing expert in the corporate world, he had a disconnect with a new role that he accepted and called it quits. After that short stint, instead of looking for another role, Vamsee took the plunge and became an entrepreneur. Good morning, Vamsee. How are you?
Thank you so much, Sharifa. I'm doing good. How are you?
I am excellent. Excited to have you here. Tell us about that journey. You called it quits. You're not doing this anymore. You're not going to be an employee. You're going out on your own. What happened, Vamsee?
No, it was a tough decision. And as I mentioned, as you just read it out, I had a short disconnect with my last stint, which only lasted for like 5 months. So I had two options, whether I could go for another role or I could take the plunge and become an entrepreneur, because that's been on top of my head for almost 2.5 years. But I really didn't have the opportunities to go and explore, because I was really happy with what was offered in terms of the job, the kind of people that I was working in the corporate world. But when the time came, I weighed out my opportunities and finally decided probably this is the time that I can go and explore this world. But the journey was tough. I didn't really get the kind of start that I was looking for, simply because as someone who had no coach, no one to show you the direction, I didn't even know what my niche was and who I was serving. So for someone like that, it's very tough to really get into a specific space where you could exactly know what you're doing and where you're headed. So that really, lasted for almost 14 months. I was jumping ships every 2 months, trying to chase a different, shiny object for a few months, and then I would move on to another one. But in April 2020, I had this idea right in the middle of the pandemic when we had the global shutdown about why not bring some of these really, big six-figure, seven-figure entrepreneurs who are doing the kind of business that they were doing pre-pandemic, even during the pandemic. And maybe those are the kind of people who probably I can bring on a common platform like a virtual summit where they can share their secrets. I mean, they can spill some beans about how they are still being able to be in the business when a lot of businesses are going out of what they were doing and they are shutting down the shops. And so I kind of brought them up, did the outreach, had them accepted. They loved the mission in terms of what I was doing at that point, because they were really trying to come and help as many entrepreneurs as possible share their strategies, their secrets, so that if one of them can really help one another business sustain and see through the pandemic, that would probably what they would expect to do. So I did that virtual summit, but that was again through a lot of challenges because I'm in India, and for someone to do all of that stuff from India was really challenging. Every day I wake up to a new challenge and I had to figure out a solution to what I should be doing with that. So generally a virtual summit should not take more than 60 to 90 days. But I had about 35 speakers on my summit where I was expecting to only interview about 10 to 15 people. And then it probably took about 4.5-5 months, because I mean, as I said, every single day there is a roadblock that I had to kind of clear up. So, but at the end of it, the product was really good. I had a super reception for the summit, and some of the biggest names, at least in the community that I am a part of, have taken time and shared value, and a lot of people consumed content on that summit, went back, implemented that in their business, and really thanked me for the kind of thing that I did, especially during the summit, during the pandemic. So that kind of led to a thought process in terms of how I can continue my journey of trying to get these successful entrepreneurs, share their value, share the strategies that are really working for them, and people can take a feather off their cap and go back and implement that in their business. That is when I thought of Authority Entrepreneurs podcast. So the idea was that when I did the summit and I had this little time of retrospection in terms of what went wrong before I did the summit versus what happened after the summit, because everyone started talking about how I really did the summit in the scale that I did. And, I kind of started helping other entrepreneurs launch their virtual summits as well. So when I did that retrospection, one of the things that was very clear to me was that even with someone who is an expert in what they are doing, because that's what really brings you into the world of entrepreneurship, they are still trying to see through every single month. That hustle is still on. They have to see through every month to get that money on the table, feed their family, pay salaries to their team if they have one. So that is still not really helping them, because even as an expert, you are still getting into that hustle every single month. Versus someone who has the same skill, but he's an authority in the niche that he represents, can really move mountains. The moving of the needle is easy for them compared to an expert who is hustling every month. So that was something which was really a brain, a brain blowing moment for me at that point. So what I really thought was, if I can bring people who are successful entrepreneurs on a podcast, a show that I wanted to do, where they can talk about how they had that transition from an expert to an authority in terms of what they were doing when they started out, how they started out as an expert. They didn't have the start like I had, and this slowly started that transition, moved from that phase of just hustling every single month to be able to impact more lives, impact the kind of people
who
wanted to do that.
There's a lot. I applaud you, everything that you're doing. I definitely applaud you. Very interesting, especially your podcast. I just launched my own Potterly podcast directory. I love to add your podcast to that as well. So check that out. But I wanted to go over to Dr. Kim real quick. We're talking about entrepreneurship, and then Judy brought in being an educator. What are you seeing with entrepreneurs over the last, I would say, year or so, as far as the direction that they're going in?
Well, there's a lot of entrepreneurs and there's lots of directions, right? So this is, the pandemic has been a time of unprecedented change, at least in my, you know, my existence. And we've seen like the whole gamut where some people have really had to dial back and almost shut down because of the way of things that we can do today, where it's really been freeing for some companies as well. So for example, the Startup Ladies used to be all live in person and they went to virtual. And so now there are Startup Ladies in something like 20 states instead of just Indianapolis. I had invested in a company that did video apartment tours and their growth was 1500% through the first half of the year.
Wow.
Nobody's going into apartments now to look around, right? We're still making changes virtually. So some of that, one of the things that we talk about in business is this idea of crossing the chasm moments. Like there's like telehealth has been here for a while, but was really, really poorly used. And this pandemic, it has really moved to being as many as 85% of office visits for 3 or 4 months. And it's probably going to hold steady around 30 or 40%. So it's over the rest of our lifetime. So that's what entrepreneurs need to be looking for is, who needs the help that they offer today? And what does that help look like? It's going to be different from what it was before. And we don't know how long we're going to be here, but you know, some people are saying another year, some people are saying 2 years. And there are some things that we've learned now that we're never going to give up. And so you helped us through the pandemic and you can help us through the next whatever, we're going to reward you because we still need a lot of help.
Yes, we do. What is advice that you have for entrepreneurs, Aiden?
Yeah, in regards to like marketing, I would definitely say that entrepreneurs need to constantly be focused like exclusively on like one sort of like stream. Like I see people focused on like social media, they're on Twitter, they're on Facebook, they're on Instagram, they're kind of scattered. So really developing a strategy plan is really important. If you're just kind of scattered, which I see a lot of people just kind of posting randomly, just sort of testing, and that's good at the start, but at the end, you have to have like more of a like something which is coming with your brand, not just random things posting on Facebook. Because I know a lot of people, they don't have like a real strategy and plan. They're still kind of like, the whole social media thing is even new to them.
Right, right.
You can't leave us with that, Aiden. We don't know how to make the strategy plan. What would you advise?
Yeah, I would definitely advise, like it depends on the platform actually. Like some platforms, for example, like Twitter, I would say videos were kind of shifting because like in the past people like, images worked best, but now we're kind of shifting more towards like videos. So being able to develop videos, edit videos, you might need to hire someone for videos, but being able to post consistent content every single day, especially like, for example, YouTube, it's more of like a long form type of content. Twitter, a little bit shorter and stuff. So you just have to be able to know like your audience, like what are they looking for exactly? And you can look up hashtags and see what your competitors are posting and kind of create your own unique twist on like what went viral. That's what I would say.
So one of the things I advocate for is a content calendar. Like,
yep.
A calendar, like print it off and write, what are you going to do every day? And where are you doing it? Yep. And there's tools like Hootsuite and Buffer and others that you can actually sit down and do your whole week's social media at once on Sunday night.
One thing I wanted to say in terms of the publishing world, I've found this out. 2 years ago, or maybe all of us used to go into bookstores and we would just browse. I know myself, I would go in and I'd look up and it'd be an hour and I had been standing in the aisle reading a book or looking around. And what's changed with the pandemic for publishers is that there's no more of that discoverability. That's what the word that they used with us. They said, you know, now a person has to know what book they're going to buy and then they order it or they do curbside pickup or whatever, but the days of just going into a bookstore and just browsing and, oh, I discovered this wonderful book that I didn't even know existed. and I'm going to buy, those days are gone. So to me, when you were talking about the how the pandemic has changed things, it's changed in that world as well. And that makes it more of the author and the publisher have to do the virtual route. They can no longer just rely on the bookstores to sell their books.
Yes, absolutely. Allison, hashtag, do you use them for your business?
Yeah, I do this thing called like a hashtag game, and I do a lot of hashtag research, and I look at different hashtags and how many posts are associated to those hashtags, and then a lot of times I'm clicking on people's I do all the hashtags through Instagram. And so I'll get on one hashtag and click around, and then I'll find one that had like the top, and then I'll look at that. And then I have like I use all 30, and they're all different, but the same, and, you know, and everything. And so it's kind of like I don't know the right word, but when my stuff is at the top of different hashtag pages, I guess, I get really excited and I do screenshots and I send them to my friends. Like, look, I'm at the top. Look, my reel is at the top. You know, there's quite a few hashtags I'm always trying to climb to the top so that Instagram will show my post to non-followers. I get a lot of new leads through Instagram. So that's where I spend most of my time. And I use later.com to do my scheduling, because I like the link in bio where people can click on images and then it takes them to links, because I really wanted to bridge that gap, because you lose HTML clicking on Instagram. And so I wanted people to be able to click. So I had to figure out how to get that all done. So I found link in bio, which is associated with later.com. And so so I paid the $25 to have the special things. And it's really, really been great, because I get so many non-followers like my stuff. And then what's great about Instagram is when you like something without following, they show it to you again. And then I get another like from a non-follower. And then usually at that point, by the second likes, they start following. And then from there, I'll notice that I'll have an influx of followers. And then I will post what I call a blunt post, where it says exactly what I'm looking for, what people will get, and how to contact me. And then my phone just blows up within anywhere between 30 minutes. And for a full 25 to 48 hours, I'm calling back leads and everything. And so that's why I call it the hashtag game, because it's exciting. And I kind of have the formula on how to get there. And then the exciting part is converting the followers to leads and then going and meeting them. And then I always ask my clients, how did you find me? And they're like, I don't know. I was just scrolling through Instagram and one day you just showed up on my feed. And I'm like, yes, that's the hashtags. And then they go, and then I saw another picture by you. And I go, yes, thank you, Instagram. And then they go, so I decided to follow you. And then when you posted, you were only looking for 3 garages to organize. I wanted to be the one that you organize. And so then I go, yes, thank you, marketing.
Bomsy, you're over there smiling and nodding. What are your thoughts?
Can I ask a quick question?
Absolutely. Go ahead, Dr. King.
How much time are you spending on Instagram to do that on a given day or week?
Well, now, because I've like dialed down my little process, I don't spend a lot of time, because unless I'm looking for a new hashtag to climb, I have like 5 right now that I'm working on climbing. But initially, when I found out about this in April of last year, I went to a branding summit and they told us this secret. And it was a branding summit for realtors, and I'm not a realtor, but I figured most of their content would be adaptable to any business. So there was some, you know, so they were encouraging certain hashtags to use always because you're a realtor. And I'm like, well, I can't use that, because then realtors will get mad that I'm using their hashtag improperly. So now I probably don't spend more than a half hour, because like when I post on when I use later.com, I post for the whole month. I post a theme. So like in January, I talked all about COVID fatigue, and I wrote different I know we're only supposed to blog on blogs, but I did my own short blog on Instagram, and I did a part one, a part two, part three, and I scheduled all those posts. And then I ended up having eight parts. And then when I finish a garage, I do a before and after picture, and that gets sprinkled onto my timeline. I mean, throughout as I finish them, but I had that. So I try to do one theme a month that has some deep, meaty information. And then after that, it's just before and after pictures. And so,
yeah, I just want to see that you have time up front. And once you get to that time, you could scale it pretty easily once you know what you're really doing, what your messages are.
And I think before I went to the summit, I just had no clue. Instagram, I was very lost. I didn't really get it. It wasn't even on it that much. Along the lines of Aiden, I was just randomly posting on different platforms, just putting out information, but not really like leveraging it well. So when I went to that summit and they explained like how Instagram works for our business and how to be seen by non-followers, like that was like speaking my language. Cause I had the followers, I have very small followers. I had, I think about 1700 or something, but at the time, like a year ago, I was like at 600 or something. And so I was just very struggling to like, how do I grow and how do I be seen and how do I not reach, I don't want to reach 10,000 followers, but only have 10 clients. Like to me, that's kind of counterintuitive. So I rather grow, but still collect clients, but how do I convert them? So that was kind of like my inner struggle. So, so then that's why I stayed away from it, because I didn't really get how it worked and everything. And so I thought when I was posting, I was just talking to my followers, and I'm like, well, how do I reach the non-followers? So then when the hashtag thing was explained to me, I was like, just mind blown by it. And so then, in fact, I told, Yelp contacted me to do some Yelp advertising, and I go, oh no, no, I do this thing called the hashtag game. So I explained it on the phone call to the marketing person. And then he turned around and came out with a marketing plan through Yelp for me. And so then we integrated some things and I ended up buying, but, maybe I helped him. I don't know, but he was very like surprised that he had never heard of this hashtag, you know, how to gab the non-followers and everything. So I kind of felt like really cool that I taught a marketing person something, or, you know.
I think it's cool. I think it is very cool. Vamsi, your thoughts?
So I'm a big advocate of repurposing the content. Like Aiden was talking about how you can be very focused on one specific platform and really don't have a huge canvas in terms of where your content goes. I'm slightly on the other side of it, because I believe that you might have your audience in multiple platforms, I mean, based on what you're doing. So for example, I stream all my interviews to my Facebook group, and I also use that video, which goes on my YouTube. The audio of that goes into my podcast. I get someone transcribe my entire podcast into a storyboard. So that goes into the show notes, the description. So, I mean, I think it's with the kind of noise that we have in the world of internet right now, and, you know, while it is a very good strategy to confine yourself to one specific platform where you exactly know that, you know, your audience are there. For example, if you're kind of, your audience are all corporates, and LinkedIn is probably your best platform. Facebook is probably not, but the guy who is probably on LinkedIn might also have a Facebook account as such. So, you know, he could probably consume your content there as well. So I believe, repurposing the content in whichever way possible, on wherever platforms, and with the advent of VAs that you have right now that you could, hire from every part of the world, I think that kind of makes it easy for you to not really sit and do all that repurposing. You create one piece of content, send it out to them, and they would create those chunks of different pieces of material that goes specifically to Instagram, to your Facebook stories, your IG stories, Twitter stories, whatever. And I think that kind of really works to have a bigger canvas in terms of the amount of people you want to reach with one piece of content that you're doing.
Yeah, let me tell you about an example of that. So we had a company here who does cold pressed juices, and they were sending out in packages these little recipes for cocktails. And that was the only place where those recipes were, because they figured people who had it would be the ones to use it. And so we had them repurpose it and put it on the website as a, as a feeder to get leads. And then also, put them on Instagram and email them out. And, all of a sudden now they have a second company that's a cocktail company.
Wow.
Can I ask a question? And this involves marketing. Have any of you used influencers to help promote your services or your products? I've found that as I've gotten into this, they want a lot of money to do, to hold up your book and say, isn't this a cute book? And, you know, you pay them $750 to do that. And so I just wondered what your experiences were with influencers.
Yeah, it works, but I think you should also be very clear in terms of who you're getting that from, because if you have someone who has wrong audience but has 100,000 followers, that money would go in waste. So you should be very, very specific about who you're reaching out. If you know exactly that he or she has the audience with respect to the kind of product that you want them to promote, I think that's probably is the first and the biggest puzzle piece that you have to solve before you really get into influencer marketing.
Yeah, the cheap version of influencer marketing is podcasts, being podcast guests, which still, you have to treat that like a marketing program, and some of them are pay to play. But if you start small and you learn what you're doing and you get your message down, then you can kind of go up. You know, we were pretty excited to get up in a top 50 Apple podcast on entrepreneurship, but we had worked at it. It was like our 20th.
Yes. Judy, what I would say to that is, so often people make influencer marketing sound like it is so easy to do. And so when you mentioned $750 to hold your book, I would say that influencer probably doesn't even have a following, because the majority of influencers with, and I know it's just a random number, but the majority of influencers with any type of following, they may want hundreds of thousands of dollars for you to get in front of their audience, in front of their following. And, you know, I can see it from both ways, because people think that an influencer is like an overnight success. Anyone who has that type of following has been doing this for some time, doing this for years. They built their name, they built their brand, and they don't want to just take products and just push out products, because what will happen is it will affect and it will ruin their brand, which is what they're focused, you know, on. The other thing, when people want to get influencer marketing, they tend to believe that if an influencer posts one tweet, you know, maybe they have 100,000 followers or so, all of a sudden your products are just going to fly, you know, off the shelves. And that's not the way it works. When you look at influencers or celebrities that actually push a brand, Kevin Hart, Chase, if you go into a Chase bank, you see all these pictures of little Kevin Hart everywhere. So it's more than just one post or more than one tweet. So it's actual, like Aiden was saying, strategy. So that's kind of my views on it. Aiden, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned Kevin Hart. We actually walk with him and a few other like influencers to do certain shout outs. So that's actually one of the things we do to really, we get industry specific influencers for our clients to be able to get them like really good deals, because we really, really have connections with these different influencers. So it's definitely like a really effective strategy if it's targeted.
Okay, but I just want to, sorry, say it again.
I said if you can afford it.
Yeah
if you can afford it. I did a lot of research to look at who were the top influencers in terms of blended families, because mm-hmm. this book speaks to blended families. And as I made a huge list, and I've spent a lot of time studying this, and you're right. It is very expensive, and some of them are trying to sell you the banner that goes across the top of their page, or they want to do an Instagram post, or they do a tweet or whatever. And if I were to do that with my book, I don't think I would see any profits from my book. But I just wondered how you guys thought about it. I have not spent any money on that, let me tell you.
I'll tell you a fun story. So here's our book. I probably have to take off my virtual background. Here's our book. But some influencer picked it up, and now it's in Chinese.
Wow. I wanted to excellent. Congratulations, Dr. Kim. I want to respond to what you said, Judy. But before I do that, I want to ask Aiden a question. Back to your campaigns. But you develop an influencer strategy that includes multiple posts, or maybe like Judy was saying, their banner, but not just sending out a single post and then hoping people just kind of go with it. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's completely correct. And like, for example, like if you're not doing like Instagram shoutouts, there's multiple ways. It's not just like Instagram. I know a lot of people kind of go straight towards like social media, but there can also be like blogs. People write an entire blog about you. Like those are also sort of influences in that space. So there's a lot of different avenues you can take as well.
Yes. So I want to go back to what Dr. Kim was saying and what Judy was saying, because right before Dr. Kim started speaking, I thought immediately for Judy, what most people forget is how to leverage the relationship. So that's exactly what Dr. Kim did. She leveraged the relationship with the influencer to get another book. So now she has two books that are selling and not just the one book. So just like Vamsi was saying about repurposing content, it's the same idea. You leverage that relationship. Maybe, you know, people do it all the times with pictures on social media, with celebrities and with influencers. It builds their brand to be connected to certain people, and that connection and that leverage is what actually turns into sales.
Well, the thing I would add to that is some of the smaller influencers are also looking for new outlets. So one of the things that you can also do is ask them for a guest blog. Mm-hmm. They'd like to write a blog for you. And then of course they support that, you support that. And so you're getting their name and they're also getting your name. So, I mean, there are lots of ways to go into like micro influencers that will still have a larger network than you have.
Yes, absolutely. Right. Vamsi.
Yeah. So, Judy, there is this concept called Dream 100 strategy. That's something which works for a lot of people, especially I use it inside my business. So I shortlist my top 100 influencers that I probably want to work with, who can probably help me take my business to the next level. But that's an organic game. It doesn't have to be paid, because I kind of want to show up on their Facebook groups. I get into their inner circles. I want to be engaging on their Facebook lives, whatever that kind of brings me into their vicinity of people. They know me by my first name. So when you build that relationship with them, and these are people, we are talking about 100,000 followers and all that kind of stuff. And when you have a really good relationship with them, and then they start promoting it, like Sharifa said, one tweet or one post on their Facebook timeline can change everything for your business overnight. But it takes time. If you don't want to go in the paid route, I mean, this is probably the one of the best organic routes that you could take, especially trying to leverage the influencer marketing as it is.
Absolutely. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. I have enjoyed this show immensely. But what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Aiden.
Yeah, so I would definitely say that you should be focusing on like your marketing channels. A lot of people neglect them. So really getting focused on the particular channels you're posting on, be it on Facebook, Instagram, or even like posting on, like, some people don't even know, you can post on Google My Business as well. Just being able to get your message out there, your brand, is like one of the most important things you should be focusing on at this time. If you don't have your brand out there, like back in 2019, this is like the opportunity to take advantage, like right now during the whole pandemic when everyone is online.
Everyone is online. Absolutely. Dr. Kim.
Yeah. So I think entrepreneurship is awesome. Take the plunge and go and do it. And then I suggest you check out our book, because what you don't want to do is say later, where were you when? Which is the most common thing that people say after they read our book. They're like, oh, that's what I was supposed to do.
Yes. And if they want more information or to contact you, where can they do that?
Sure. The book is at thetitanic.com. It's also on every single bookseller, Amazon, etc. Or you can always reach out to me at the university, mksaxton@iu.edu.
Thank you, Dr. Kim. Vamsi, what do you have for us?
My only suggestion would be that, you start building framework strategies that could help you transition from that expert to an authority in your niche, in your business. So that way, you'll be able to impact more people, be able to charge more for your courses, your coaching programs, your masterminds, because that essentially will really want you to be in the world of entrepreneurship. Otherwise, you have still quit your 9-to-5, but you're working in a 9-to-5 job in your own business. So that's essentially what I want to say.
Powerful. Judy, what do you have for us?
I'd say that you're never too old to start a new adventure, which is what I did.
And I've learned a lot. And I would say I've learned a lot from you guys today because I'm sort of the odd duck here. But in terms of my journey, I would say be persistent, treat it like a job, which I have done, and accept rejection. Be very thick-skinned about that. And also, just as a shameless plug, Sharifa, I will hold my book up and say that I've also developed materials that are free and downloadable for teachers, counselors, and parents from my book. So they could go to my website and get that.
As far as for the teachers and educators, what are you seeing as far as resources that they need during this epidemic?
Oh my gosh. Of course they need curriculum and they need virtual field trips and they need ways to get the kids out of the living room or bedroom where they are stuck now for hours on end. They need ways to engage them physically and just, I very much fear for what's going on right now in terms of what it's gonna mean 10 years down the road when these 12-year-olds, especially these kids that are in junior high, middle school and high school, what it's gonna mean for them socially and emotionally. I really do fear for what's going on because they're stuck at home.
I would definitely agree.
Sorry, I have to say that downer, but it's the truth.
No, it wasn't a downer. I think it's the truth, and it allows for an opportunity for people to get out the house, walk, take some, you know, get some fresh air and go back to the days of, you know, when we used to play in the park. We used to play outside instead of sitting inside. So that is definitely something to remember. Thank you, Judy. Allison, what do you have for us?
Well, I just want to thank you for letting me come on the show again. It was so much fun, and I love organizing in Southern California, and I do travel. I love traveling and organizing. It's so much fun, and people can find me all over the internet. I'm known as the Organization Maven, and pretty much into any Google search or outlet, that's my username handle, and I think 2021 is going to be a continue molding and learning and adapting and rebirthing. And I think it's going to be great.
What type of clients?
Oh, I just want to help everyone. That's just my job. No judgment whatsoever. I'm really good at puzzles and Tetris and organizing, and other people are good at other things. Just organizing isn't one of them. So I just come over and help them.
Yes, wonderful. This has been an excellent show. I want to thank you all for joining me on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. Just because you didn't catch the live show does not mean you're not important. You are so important to our guests and so important to me. But we ask that you go ahead and share the show, and not only share the show, but support our guests. Our guests are here this morning to help you, to provide you with tips, strategies, guidance, and resources to build your business and improve your life. So support them. Their website link is in the Facebook post. But I always say, don't just visit the website. Follow them on social media. Reach out to them. Connect with them. Send them a message. And when you do, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at AskSharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Thank you.